hearing, a public hearing for beginners on House Bill 2185, which is the first bill that came out of the House Revenue Committee this session. Lizbeth, what does this bill do?
Chairman Deckard, committee members.
Representative, the good representative from Coos Bay is being ignored here.
We're waiting for Ken, I thought.
Oh. Okay.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. You have before you House Bill 2185, and what this bill does is it's going to establish a date certain for foreign non-resident personal income taxpayers to file personal income tax refunds. And what this is doing is conforms then the personal income tax refund time period for foreign non-residents to be the same as other personal income tax filers in the future. Now, basically what happened was during the 1999 legislative session, there was Senate Bill 874, and this was enacted to modify the definition of Oregon resident to exclude individuals who qualified as a resident in foreign countries under the IRS statutes. This legal change resulted in also excluding these foreign non-residents from the specific time frame in which they need to file for refunds that the other taxpayers in Oregon are subject to. So under current law, there is no limitation placed on filing refund claims for any year if you are a foreign non-resident. Under current law, taxpayers have either 3 years from the time of the personal income tax return is first filed, excluding extensions, or 2 years from the time the tax or a portion of the tax is paid, whichever is later, to file then a personal income tax refund. Now, basically, this is going to have very minimal reduction in state general funds. It just could potentially reduce the amount of income tax refunds provided to foreign non-resident income taxpayers, since current law has no limitation on the time period for these refunds.
Hmm. Thank you. Ms. Buchanan, there you are. Welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Corcoran.
What was the vote on this in the House?
This came out 54 to nothing. I was going to ask Senator Corcoran, maybe you'll fill us in on Senate Bill 874 from last session.
Thank you,
Ms. Buchanan. It'd be interesting to hear your perspective on that bill.
Being that I'm a foreign resident, non-resident.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Elizabeth did a really good job in explaining what the bill does. It might be seen just as a housekeeping fix or a technical correction. The 99 legislation did not place a deadline on the time to file a refund claim, and it did apply retroactively. So some old years that were otherwise closed were opened to refunds. The question is, would you think it's a good policy for a person to come in 10 or 20 years from now and file a refund claim? This one particular group of taxpayers is being treated differently than the general three-year statute provides. So that's just the question. Do you want to conform them to the general standard?
How many cases did we have that would fall under this statute?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know exactly, but I would expect it's less than 1,000 returns that were filed, probably well less than that. It's simply a change in treatment of taxpayers. They were filing as full-year residents in some cases for the year they went overseas and the year they came back. This change let them file as part-year residents instead. Uh-huh. So that was the change that was made in 1999.
Chairman Deckard, I just have some numbers from the last 1999 legislation, and at that time, Department of Revenue found that there were only like 75 foreign address only that were part-year returns and 83 that were full-year returns. So, you know, total maybe 150. The following year, there was about 200 in 1996. So it's a very small number of foreigners that are considered, quote-unquote, you know, foreigners because they have a foreign address and they would be considered by the IRS statutes as foreigners each mm-hmm. year.
Thank you.
It always makes me nervous when Ms. Buchanan smiles. You know, anybody from Revenue that smiles makes me very nervous. Just for the record.
Please do not smile. In general, we try not to smile in this committee. It's right after lunch.
When Paul Warner smiles, it's like the cat that ate the canary, revenue guy. You know?
I would just note for the record that no one in the audience is smiling.
They're all asleep.
Close the public hearing on Senate House Bill 2185 and open a work session on 2185.
Mr. Chair? Sure.
Go ahead.
Senator Ringo.
I move that we give this bill a do-pass recommendation, send it through the floor, and ask that Senator Corcoran carry it on the floor.
I object.
Senator Ringo has moved House Bill 2185 to the floor with a do-pass and has moved that Senator Corcoran be the carrier of the bill. Is there any... comments or discussion?
Oh, I think I heard an objection, Mr. Chairman. That means we call the roll.
Yeah, no, Chair, no, can no. You please call the roll?
Aye.
I'm going to carry the damn thing. I might as well vote for it.
Aye.
Aye. Nice to see you up and taking
that. It's an aye.
Good.
Yes. The bill passes. Senator Ringo will be our carrier of that bill.
Oh, that wasn't bad. I like this.
Thank you, Lizbeth.
The Beaver type was fantastic.
Your plating. And are we ready? So Senator Messerly is on his way. We are... And I'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 327. Representative Verger, I would note that the Senate Revenue Committee just moved the first House bill. So you can report back that as we get House bills from House Revenue,
right.
We are just moving them right along.
Right. I will definitely report that to them, and I know they'll be very impressed.
And maybe also, Representative, you could report that the good senator from Beaverton doesn't know how to start a committee on time.
Oh, all right.
I will report
that as
thank
well.
That good great. Senator from Beaverton.
Let me tell you that this is a very interesting bill to me because it reminds me of the man that painted his house and improved his grounds and put a fence around it, and they sent for the assessor so he could raise the taxes. This bill, if you'll look on line 20, we'd like to eliminate a criteria. The current unemployment rate of the county is at least one percentage point higher than the unemployment rate of the county for the immediately prior year, or at least 50% higher than the current unemployment rate of this state. This would eliminate this requirement because in Coos County, where we have worked so very hard to bring our unemployment rate down, we brought it down at the point that the state unemployment rate went up. And so what it says to us now is that our enterprise zone businesses are not going to be eligible for the long-term tax exemption. Because we are too good in relation to the state. So I think that it is not going to just affect Coos County. We have about 30 enterprise zones right now. And you're going to see, maybe perhaps you have in your packet, the impact that it would have. It would drop to 18. So whether it's in eastern Oregon, there's a number of counties that are going to have exactly the same problem. But I think the thing that worries me the most is that we have criteria that when people work so very hard to get businesses in, such as American Bridge, and we couldn't have gotten them there without the enterprise zone and without the long-term tax exemption. They just would have gone some other place. The answer to our economic problems and woes today is that we create more jobs that can pay more income tax to the state of Oregon so that we can fund our schools and do things that we need to do. And we have this budget crisis, and we need to look at economic development. And these are some of the things that we just need to correct so that it is an incentive to our businesses to come to our locations and not change it. And it really was not our fault that we worked hard and got it down just at the time that your unemployment would rise so that our relationship developed. So.
Mm-hmm. Representative Berger, we just we didn't get your name, although we all know it.
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, I'm Joanne Berger, state representative from District 9.
Senator Corcoran. So the businesses in your enterprise zone down there, Representative, are there any more cattle rustling, messerly operations in that? Do they qualify?
No. Those have all been put out of business, I'm sorry to say.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Senator Ken Messerly from District 5. And Mr. Chair, I think I've been impugned.
You have. But we're going to make a trade. We just, before you got here, proposed a trade. So we're taking Representative Berger, and then the House revenue is getting Senator Corcoran. So
and another representative to be named later.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify today, and this is important to my community. As I was gathering information to present today, I found out that of the six counties in my new district, five of them in recent judgments have lost their ability to benefit from the enterprise zone. And they would be Coos County, Western Lane, all of Lincoln County, Polk County, and Yamhill County. And so it is important. And the issue, as I understand it, is that simply not that our economy has improved, because I think my whole district, as is some other districts in the state and Senate districts as well, are still in very dire, serious economic situations. But the situation is that we've simply had people move away from there. The labor force has moved away, which has changed the unemployment figures and how that's reported. But in my opinion, that's not a good indicator of what's really going on with the economy. Our school populations are still dropping, both North Bend and Coos Bay, between 75 and 100 students per year. Still, that's been going on for some time. In discussing with the communities, the businesses in the communities, they're struggling, having some very, very serious struggles, and many of them have indicated to me anecdotally that they really don't know why they stay in the area. It is just, the economy is in just terrible, terrible shape. We've got some positive things happening. If we can get a little bill through the House that we've sent through the Senate here dealing with the PUCs and the natural gas, construction of the natural gas line can start this spring. We're working on our internet access, digital and POPs. Hope to get that through some consortiums going this spring. So we've got some things, and plus there's some interest in getting more going at the port. But quite frankly, this is a very serious issue of not having an incentive to bring in companies such as Nucor, companies like that who have an interest in the port, the deep water port, and the facilities that we offer in Coos County. I have to tell you that because our economy is so bad in shipping and our normal types of commerce and wood products manufacturing and adding value, much of our infrastructure is having great difficulty. As an example, the environmental oil spill facilities, which we have to have because we are a port, where we used to have a ship a day back in the good old days, 20 years ago, 15 years ago maybe, we're down to five or six ships per month now. And what that does is just adds the cost tremendously to the ability of our communities to provide the services for oil spills, which we have to have by law. And it's those kind of things that are really, really making it very serious for us to hang on. We think we're on the verge of moving forward, but it's critical that we have these kinds of incentives in place. And the timing of losing this incentive is very, very unfortunate. I should say, too, that in Reedsport, the American Bridge company, which is a tremendous positive for the state of Oregon, could not have come to the coast without the kind of incentives that Douglas County has. Be happy to answer questions.
Questions? Naringa.
Thanks for testifying today. I just wanted to follow up on what you just said, and Representative Verger said it as well, that American Bridge would not have come but for the tax credit. I'm wondering how you know that.
Oh, how do we know that?
Yeah.
Well, because when they start to deal with you and bring a business into your area, they have a whole list of criteria that they have that they want to know. Are we in an enterprise zone? Are we in an urban renewal zone? What kind of tax exemptions are? You know, it's like the little poem, My Shadow Goes In and Out With Me. What's good of use of him is more than I can see. The competition is the shadow on the wall for Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the car business, and I can look next door and see Honda. So I don't have to worry. I know I've got competition. But in Oregon, we don't see that competition that's going on in the other states that are offering all of these incentives. And so when people say we're not going to lose that tax credit, it's going off the both. We need to bring it on. We've got to have a balance, and I think that's so important right now.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Inga.
I mean, just I don't dispute anything that you said, but I think it is a little bit more complicated than that because businesses are always going to ask for it. Because if they get a tax break, why not ask? And that there are many, many other factors involved in their siting decisions. And obviously, sometimes maybe the tax break is the deciding factor. And sometimes it might not be. It's hard to know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, I could expand a little bit on what Representative Berger just said, in that my basis is discussions with the Director of the Chamber of Commerce, who's been to the meetings when the negotiating was going on, conversations with the county commissioners from Douglas County, who really did put that package together, conversations with the port of Umpqua, and who's been very much involved in these, in the negotiations of getting that company there and getting their permits through and all those kind of things. That in the case of American Bridge, it's my understanding that they actually had earnest money down, I believe it was in St. Helens. And because of the incentives and the and some of the rail and the barge facilities and everything they had there at Reedsport, did walk away from St. Helens and come to Reedsport. So it's very competitive, very, very competitive. And there are added costs to having business on the coast. Simply, we're farther away from our fuel supplies, farther away from I-5 corridor, and so I just can't say any more strongly that it is very, very competitive.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo. A lot of people have different reasons that they believe businesses come to an area. A lot of people will tell you it's really good schools. And other people will tell you it's just if you can retrain the workforce. And other people will say it's a quality of life. It's probably all of those things. But basically, it is the profit picture. Businesses come to a place that they feel like they can be profitable. And that's really, and it isn't in a greed way. It's simply in a way of sustaining their own business.
That's what they're for.
And the incentives that we offer them give them more opportunities to have a good profit picture, and also the more profitable they are, the better jobs they can offer. With Nucor, they were going to offer $55,000 a year average salary for some of the jobs at the top management, and we were very excited from our labor interest in that kind of dialogue to have with them.
Why the language on non-urban? What's the rationale for putting non-urban enterprise zones in?
Well, the enterprise zones that we are looking at and are affected are the rural enterprise zones. I'm actually not familiar with where, if the enterprise zones, I'll have to look at that list again. Are there some of the urban enterprise zones that would be in danger of going away?
Perhaps. If OEDD could come up, we'll get them. I know North and Northeast Portland is one.
For the record, my name is Art Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Thank you, Senator Deckard and members of the Revenue Committee. I'm happy to be here. Your question is with respect to this particular long-term program's focus on the non-urban zones versus the urban zones. Okay, there's five urban zones, like northeast Portland, and when this program was first created back in 97, it was really just directed at rural areas. And so it was specified there, effectively, you can see it on page 1, line 28 of the bill. It was specifically directed at the non-urban zones, which are most zones, but they're all over the state. And the other thing, it's a little bit redundant because of the counties like Multnomah County, Marion County, Lane County that have urban zones. None of them would, under these criteria, even with this bill, Senate bill, qualify. The only exception would be Jackson County, where you have the Medford urban zone. So it's a limitation, but it's not the only limitation that effectively excludes northeast Portland from this program, though they can still use, of course, the regular five-year enterprise zone exemption.
Hold on one sec. All right. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You guys all good with it?
I'm good with it. You good with it? Are you okay with it?
Yeah.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 327. Open the work session on Senate Bill 327.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 327 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 327 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Any objections? So ordered. And I think we'll name Senator Messerly the carrier of the bill.
To the floor.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 313. Yes, come on up. E-commerce enterprise zones.
Senator Deckard and Senator Fisher. Now that is an odd couple.
The original odd couple.
Liz
the original Beth. Odd couple.
Chairman Deckard and committee members, with Senate Bill 313, what this is doing is it's really dealing with legislation from last session, Senate Bill 299, which then allowed the Economic Community Development Department to establish four e-commerce enterprise zones within existing enterprise zones and designated the city of North Plains for electronic commerce. Now, the firms have to be engaged in electronic commerce. They're also eligible for a property tax exemption on qualified new investment. There's a non-refundable income tax credit that equals 25% of the new investment related to electronic commerce, sales, customer service, order fulfillment, or broadband infrastructure. The credit is currently limited at $2 million per year per firm. Under current law, the income tax credit is limited to the tax year in which the firm's qualified property is eligible for a property tax exemption. So what is before you, basically, there's some cleanup issues a lot due to the timing of attaining a property tax exemption for certain businesses. There may be a time lag then between pre-certification and qualification of a new investment for that property tax exemption. So this could then delay businesses' ability to qualify for the income tax credit. And this act in Senate Bill 313, it's going to be modifying then and allowing firms which are pre-certified by Economic Community Development Department to qualify for the income tax credit. And it also then clarifies that investments of capital assets that are made during that pre-certification stage qualify for the income tax credit. And it also specifies that a non-resident can qualify for the income tax credit. It outlines the records that a business taxpayer who qualifies for the income tax credit can keep, must keep for auditing purposes. And it's specifying the procedure by which an income tax credit could be disallowed if the property is not used within the electronic commerce purposes and exempt from property tax within 3 years. So this is beginning January 1st, 2002, really to clean up last session's bill. And last session, the impact on that bill was showing a reduction in state revenues of $1.6 million for the 2001-03 biennium and a reduction in property tax of $200,000 in the 01-03 biennium from the establishment of these new electronic commerce zones. So basically what you're seeing then just is a transfer of this reduction that we had from last session into the 2003-05 biennium. Again, these revenue impacts have already incorporated into the economic forecast, so there will not be any needed for changes there. So this really doesn't have a revenue impact overall. It just has a timing issue with when those reductions will actually be seen in our revenues.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, and can you begin by at least briefing the committee on how we're doing with this bill? I know it went through Senate Revenue last time. It's how's it done in terms of job creation and where have jobs been created?
Sure. Chair Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Allen. I'm the Small Business and Emerging Technology Manager at the Economic and Community Development Department. In a nutshell, this bill, which created a new benefit to try to incent creation and investment in electronic commerce firms, has been, we believe, highly successful, particularly in Southern Oregon. It's been used extensively in the Medford Urban Enterprise Zone and also used successfully in Roseburg. There are three other communities eligible to use the program that haven't been successful with it yet. But it's been exceptionally successful in Southern Oregon, generating something over $100 million in new capital investment and probably 500 immediate, nearly 500 immediate jobs associated with that capital investment. Just a bit of quick background. This is a bill that stems from a recommendation of the Oregon Internet Commission on which you served, Chair Deckard. The commission was created by the 99 legislative session to make recommendations about electronic commerce and other uses of the Internet. The last session of the legislature created the e-commerce enterprise zone program as a way to implement one of several recommendations from that commission. We were directed to the bill, Senate Bill 229 last session, directly designated North Plains as an electronic commerce community and then authorized us to designate four additional e-commerce zones. As originally introduced, the bill provided that we establish a completely standalone e-commerce enterprise zone program with a whole separate set of administration and process and procedures. We recommended that it, in fact, be merged into the existing enterprise zone program and linked up and added as an additional feature to that program. And that really is where the problem cropped up. Effectively, the merger of the bill into the existing program was a little too thorough. Without wanting to belabor details, essentially the enterprise zone program as it exists today provides that to get the property tax relief, you have to apply to be designated as a qualified firm. And there's a window in statute that you do this from January 1st to April 30th, which works great for property taxes because it's for the following property tax year beginning July 1st. When you add the income tax portion, as was added here, the firm has to be qualified to get the income tax credit, which means it can't apply until January 1st. But to be able to take advantage of the credit, it has to spend the money in the tax year in which it wants to, for which it wants to take the credit. So effectively, you have to spend the money before December 31st, but you can't get eligible to take the credit until January 1st, and you have these two non-overlapping time periods. If you have a non-calendar tax year, you're okay. There's a window in there that you can do that. But as we currently understand the language, if you have a calendar tax year, which is most of the businesses in Oregon, effectively that linkage of the wording makes it impossible to make use of the tax credit. And that's what this bill would correct. We've effectively changed the definitions so that problem is fixed. And because there are a number of businesses that have made significant commitments to investment and job creation on the basis of expecting the program would actually work the way we all thought it would at the time, there's a retroactivity feature that helps us capture the 2002 tax year. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Also, Deborah Buchanan from Department of Revenue is here. If they quickly would get over my head in terms of income tax code.
Senator Hannah.
Yes. The revenue impact, I'm looking at this statement by Legislative Revenue Office, and it says the 2001 Act had a revenue impact of reducing corporate income taxes by $1.6 million for the 0103 biennium. And it said the revenue impact, $1.6 million, would be realized in the next biennium rather than this biennium. Are you well-versed, or can somebody explain why it wasn't in the existing biennium and why we're pushing it in the next biennium?
Senator Hannon, this is because of some of the timing issues that he was talking about, in the sense that between like January and April, you have to apply for that property tax exemption. And if they don't apply within that window of time, then they don't qualify for the property tax exemption, and then they can't get the income tax credit that year. Well, you have to get that first.
My question is, has this been calculated in the budget for 03-05?
Senator Hannon, that's correct. These are all estimates that have been given to economic and to the Office of Economic Analysis as far as incorporating into our forecast. So these are all estimates that we gave them last session when we passed this bill, and I've even talked with them since then and explained about this timing issue and how to move that impact into the 03-05 biennium.
Could the revenue impact be more or could be less depending on the economy?
Senator Hannon, that's always true. That's right. I mean, the revenue, you know, projections will go up and down depending on the economy. But, you know, these kind of estimates, it's such that if we just transfer and explain to Office of Economic Analysis that the assumptions that we've made in coming up with these estimates, and then we transfer those and give those to Office of Economic Analysis to incorporate in their forecast.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we measure, I'm really familiar with this because I sponsored the bill last session, but I'm not sure if we measure. I know you guys have kept me abreast of, I think it's 600 or 700 new jobs to the state based on this program, and I don't know if we measure the positive feedback and revenue that we receive from those companies, whether it was Dell and Roseburg, or I'm not sure the other ones, and I know they've all been located mainly in southern Oregon.
Senator Deckard, the figure that firms have committed to, which probably is conservative from their standpoint, is just shy of 500 jobs that have been created so far with the program. We are able to use a model to calculate the net return on investment in terms of state income taxes for that job creation. Once you go down that path, you can sort of begin a convoluted argument about how to go about calculating a return on investment. But we are able to give you a figure along those lines. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is it? The figure?
We'd have to run these actual jobs through a model to give you a number. But if you'd like that number, we can generate that for you.
Now, just as the feedback of when you experience a revenue reduction. The whole idea behind this is bringing new jobs to the state, and how do we do it, and
sure,
proper incentives. And I think it's good evidence for us that when you do it, you end up trumping that 1.6 many times over every year that they're here creating new jobs in these enterprise zones.
Yeah, the short version of the model is that you plug in a job at a given wage, and you presume that that job will persist for a period of time, and you calculate an amount of revenue in the first year and a declining amount in the second year because some of those jobs have gone away and so on. Most of the revenue ends up occurring in about the first 3 years of job creation, but it persists out about 9 with some variations depending on industry and some of those kinds of things. But we'd be happy to get those figures for you.
Okay.
So are you assuming that all of these are new jobs, new people to the state, or are you assuming they left some other job at $40,000 and going to be coming to some new job? Or
In terms of the calculation for return on investment, I'm not an expert on the model, Mr. Chairman, so I couldn't tell you that for sure. My expectation is that the assumption is that those are net new jobs in the economy, and you calculate it on the basis of net new jobs, and if you want to assume a corresponding loss of jobs elsewhere, you can do that. I think that's a fairer thing to do when the economy is running closer to full employment, when a competing source of jobs would take away from existing employers. I think it's safe to say that in the current economy, new sources of jobs tend to get filled by people who don't currently have jobs, and it helps reduce unemployment.
Senator Hannah. One other question to staff. I noticed you have a Senate bill and a House bill. What's the status of the House bill?
Senator Hannon, it's really transpiring right now. They're having a public hearing on it the exact same time we're having a public hearing on this bill. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen with
this bill.
Yeah, I think it's going to move. But
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, I just came from that room, and they passed it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
If that's passing, do we need this then?
Senator Hannon, what I plan to do is to not hold a work session because, in speaking with the chair of House Revenue, they're going to the floor, so we will just hold off until the bill gets
there.
All
right, excuse me.
Good, then I don't have to vote no.
Thank you. Close. Any questions? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 313. And I think that concludes our work, but Paul is on his way to dispute that notion.
Your network's never done.
You have to stay after because you were late.
Yeah. 327 shows the revenue impact, the fiscal impact is not done yet. So we just like the fiscal Muslim hasn't done that, so I don't think you can do it. Bring it back as a work session.
That's the way you can do a vote in that.
We have a work session on Senate Bill 327, and I'll move to reconsider.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 327. We are still getting some fiscal information and revenue information.
Now, Mr. Chairman, having been on the prevailing side of Senate Bill 327, I ask the committee to reconsider the bill.
Senator Farrelly has moved to reconsider the vote, which we passed in Bill 327.
Explanation, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, we have additional fiscal impact that wasn't available to the committee when we considered the bill. I think it's incumbent on us to bring the bill back, inform the committee of the additional fiscal impact, and then reconsider the vote.
Thank you. Any questions, comments, objections? So ordered. Good work, Paul. Thank you. And with that, we are done for the day. Thank you. And Senate Revenue is...